The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 4th of August, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. Let's start the show off by giving you the call-in numbers. You can call us at 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on the Guardian Radio text line at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. And that's powered by BTC and standard text rates apply. Now remember, we're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. Or you could listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. Or you could download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. I've got a quick show for you today. I have my return guest, Erin Brown, here so we could continue to delve into an important discussion about inclusion for members of the disabled community in all aspects of life and governance in the Bahamas. But before we get to that, I have a little tiny bit of what is in the news. I think by now, we have all heard the sad news, the passing of the former Governor General, Arthur A.D. Hanna. I am a proud member of the Hanna Hasty Tynes clan. I want to send condolences to my fellow clan members, in particular my cousins in Dira, to my cousin Glennis, to my cousin Dion, to my cousin Kwame, to all my cousins. I'm going to tell you all a quick story about A.D. Hanna and a quick story about the man that he must have been, right? Now, I don't know if this story is true, but I have to share it because I hope it's true. So I sit and talking to some elders, some older Bahamians. We're talking politics. We're talking about A.D. Hanna. We're talking about PLP in the early days. And somebody jump up and say, now, of course, the person probably had a beer in their hand. Jump up and say, let me tell you a story. Say, did you know when A.D. was campaigning for the PLP down in Acklands, his wife, Beryl, went with him. And it is alleged that A.D. Hanna's wife told the people in the Southern Islands that it's very important that they vote PLP because the Queen sent her to tell them to vote PLP, right? And I burst out laughing. I thought, it's hilarious, you know, but it sounds like something an Acklands woman would do. But more importantly, it sounds like something a woman who's determined to marry an Acklands man would do. Right? And if that is the measure of that woman, I could only imagine how amazing A.D. Hanna had to have been to capture her attention and to cause her to commit herself to him. What a giant of a man he must have been. Anyway, that's just a quick note. I know the entire day will be filled with mementos, with sentiments, with people sharing memories and thoughts about this giant of a man. The only other thing I want to say about A.D. Hannah, because I got a quick show today, is that I will always remember him as being one of the only quote-unquote framers of the Constitution to repeat emphatically that the Bahamas is not a Christian nation in the legal and political sense. We are not a theocratic state. And while we may have abiding respect for Christian values, we acknowledge, recognize, and respect the rights of others to practice, to hold faith the way they see fit. That's also a very important statement for us to remember. And I would like to thank him for providing a constant reminder for those who misunderstand the nature of this particular democracy. On another note, just before we go, I got a couple more minutes before we get into our session. In the news today, I want to say good morning to the police officers on Bay Street who are paying more attention to traffic and the flow of traffic, and thus the safety, the conditions for pedestrians who have to move through this treacherous area. I want to say good morning and thank you. Also, to the woman who was jaywalking in front of the Hilton this morning, please be safe, ma'am. Please be safe. Please be safe. Just because they paved the road doesn't mean that the crosswalks don't exist. So use them. Use them. Now, this is something I feel compelled to touch on. I don't really want to touch on it. I don't feel like in the 21st century, in 2021, in the Bahamas, in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, that I would have to touch on this. But it appears as if nobody else is going to touch on this. And so it is important to be said. There is, in The Guardian this morning, on the bottom half, the front page, bottom fold, I think they call it, there is an article entitled, PM Unsure If State of Emergency Will Be Extended. Well, we could start right there. You should have been unsure if the state of emergency would be extended a few weeks ago when you were so certain it wouldn't. Right. You keep setting people up. You keep creating this environment that's rooted in false expectations. We all knew that there's a very big chance that the state of emergency will be extended. Now we want to know how, if you intend on shutting down the house for a couple months. We want to know how you're going to do it. But we knew it was coming. Why do you set it up? Why do you construct these narratives that leave you in this place that you are in today and then turn around and ask why there's so much vaccine hesitancy? To be honest, there's a whole government policy hesitancy. We are hesitant about the decision because we don't know what the implications of that decision are going to be. Because you don't have a policy, not a sensible one, encouraging employers to urge employees to take vaccines is not a policy. It's bordering on what I want to call contradicting the law. See, I want to be very technical about it. It's not a crime. How can it be illegal if it's not a crime? Well, there's established international law around medical decisions, medical rights. Every conversation that we have about vaccines should reference the Nuremberg Code, should be rooted in the principles represented in the Nuremberg Code. You've not mentioned those words once. Again, there are many reasons why people are hesitant to take the vaccine. There are many questions that remain unanswered. There are many questions that remain unaddressed. See, you could address a question even if you don't have the answer. For instance, it seems inevitable that people who take vaccines will have to take booster shots or will have to take a regular vaccine shot, right? What happens if I take vaccine A, but I am only able to access boosters for vaccine B? In fact, we had a number of people who took the AstraZeneca vaccine, and then it was then they found out that they could not travel to certain jurisdictions because that particular vaccine was not accepted in that jurisdiction or by all smaller jurisdictions in that larger jurisdiction. But see, here's the thing. When you say, and I'm quoting, with respect to the emergency orders, that matter is under discussion and you will be further advised. Be assured that the government will do all possible to ensure the safety of the Bahamian populace. Does that include implementing a mass testing strategy? A strategy that includes identifying and locking down hot spots? Finding the root causes of spikes? And then providing incident-specific strategies to control them? Does it include providing proper staffing in Immigration Hall? Does it include an actual upgrade of the hospital, of the healthcare system? Does it include actually hiring more staff? Does it include upgrading the hospital for patient use and not administrative use? Does it include fixing the air conditioning system in the hospital in the midst of a respiratory-based pandemic? Does it include free masks? Does it include you actually compelling the RBPF to do its job? Can you do that? But you want to compel me? See, you want to force me to give up some of my basic rights, which is what I've done. Now you are encouraging members of society to compel me to take a vaccine, but they can't compel you to get the RBPF to do its job? You want to bully me into taking a vaccine, but you can't bully your colleagues, your peers, and the people who you are responsible for to do their jobs? You can't even compel your own peers, your own cabinet members, to do their jobs. But let me go on. Be assured that the government will do all possible to ensure the safety of the Bahamian populace. We recognize that those who are hospitalized, those who are dying, those who are becoming sick are the non-vaccinated. Come on. Come on. Are they the non-vaccinated with comorbidities? What is your plan to address the needs of the communities that are specific, that are particularly vulnerable to this pandemic because of comorbidities? Goes on, therefore, if we are to improve in our hospitalization, decrease the death rate, and decrease the sickness, it is essential for us to move even more aggressively in vaccinating our people. No, let me tell you what could work. See, what could work is you announce an election date and stop creating environments unnecessarily where people put themselves at risk of contracting the virus. See, if you had been clear and certain about an election date, then people would not have been rushing to the registrar's office to get registered, to the outlets to get registered, online for hours to get registered. If you had been clear and concise and said there is no lockdown approaching for the weekend, then people wouldn't have been piling up in the liquor stores and the food stores trying to buy alcohol and rations. There are many things you could do to aggressively engage this pandemic. But telling us that vaccinations are the only way to go, first of all, it smacks of laziness. Because there are other strategies that used in conjunction with a vaccination program can also provide solutions. See, because here's the thing. Initially, we were told, and I think this is still correct, that you can produce, you can create or generate a natural immunity if you had COVID. If you had COVID, then you have a natural immunity. And so we know that with the naturally derived immunity and the vaccine derived immunity, that it is possible that we could reach the herd immunity numbers that we need to reach. See, the question isn't stopping people from catching COVID. It's never been. The state has never said that's what it is. We know that everybody will eventually catch it. The whole point was to slow down the spread so that our systems wouldn't collapse under the weight of contraction, right? The rapid rate of contraction. We always knew that people were going to get it. So the question is, what systems could we put in place to manage our move to herd immunity with those who want to get vaccinated and those who do not want to get vaccinated? Because you cannot force people to get vaccinated. And you certainly should not sit and compel, right? And cajole and then look at people and say, oh, that's not what we're doing. How could you say that? People deserve more than that. First of all, it's like you think you could treat us like little children, but you can't treat us like little children because we're not little children. And it doesn't matter how ignorant some of us are or intend to remain to be. It does not matter. You do not have the right to make these decisions for other people. See, you don't, one second, you don't just get to say, oh, well, they're stupid, so we got to make this decision and force the vaccine on them. What you could say is, ah, boy, our competency levels are not where they need to be. So we need to invest in a long-term educational strategy to improve critical thinking skills, to improve literacy, to increase exposure. That we have to do the hard work of bringing the citizens to the place they need to be to contribute at a place that we think is appropriate, right? That we think is good. I hit my 10:25 mark, so I have to leave it there. And I want you all to understand something. I am having a conversation specific to the human rights issues surrounding the idea of forced and mandatory vaccinations. That is the scope of this interrogation. Do you have the right to force vaccinations on people? And do you have the right to create an environment where vaccinations seem to be the only likely or viable solution? Particularly in the face of examples and models across the globe that do not rely on vaccinations alone for their strategy. This is the last thing I'm going to say. I really got to go. I got to go to a break. I got to let my guest co-host say something, and we got to get into this disability show. But it's the last thing I'm going to say. Dear legal community, there are 2,000 plus lawyers in this country of 400,000 people. And I wonder, where are you? Why are you not engaging these urgent legal issues? Why are you not demanding that we, at the very least, provide a space for this conversation? I'm not saying that I have the right answer, because I can only have the answer that's right for me. But what I do know is that this is a conversation that needs to be had. And anything else is immoral, indecent, unchristian, unethical. And to be honest with you, it is the antithesis of what it means to be Bahamian to me. At least that's before the gender equality referendum. My mind was stunned by the things that y'all were willing to do to other Bahamians in that referendum. Anyway, I gotta put it, pause on it there. Thank you for letting me speak this speak. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, I'm going to read through these texts, let my guest co-host say good morning, and then we're going to engage this even more important discussion about the inclusion of the disabled community and thus the most vulnerable amongst us in national life. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The one that don't fall to, the count depends on you. So tell Teddy, go tell the law. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. Stay informed about local COVID-19 updates from trusted and reliable sources. Wash your hands regularly and be sure to have hand sanitizers readily available. Keep your surroundings clean and disinfect all surfaces that carry germs. Talk to your family and friends about protecting themselves and staying healthy. For more information on COVID-19, check the Ministry of Health's website at www.bahamas.gov.bs/health and the Bahamas Ministry of Health Facebook page.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green. I got a little housekeeping for you today. I want to share with you about the Employment Incentive Program. Did you know that VAT-registered businesses who are tax-compliant are eligible to participate in the government's Employment Incentive Program and can receive up to $400 per week in tax credit for up to 10 new full-time employees? Visit atlas.revenue.gov.bs to apply. This offer is valid until December 31st, 2021. This message is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. So I see I've got some texts here. Miss Green, two straight, FNM, FNM. Another text. Hi, my fondest memory of the Honorable A.D. Hanna was when he said BTC was worth billions of dollars on ZNS. That's the company with the beige servers, hey? That's the company with the beige servers, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, it has the potential. Mm-hmm. Another text, Ms. Green, I'm ready for this emergency order to end because I'm a business owner and this is hurting businesses. Meanwhile, the hotels can operate and people staying there can roam about all night while we have to close before curfew. I think we all know what to do now after 16 months of going through this. Bahamians are responsible people. Stop bullying us into subjection because it leads to rebellion. Another text, also with all due respect, oh, great show as usual, Brave was to blame for the long lines of people to register to vote because he said elections was that month, not the PM. But you know how easy it was for the PM to get up and say, listen, I could say emphatically it's not going to be this month and we're looking at 2022? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very easy. Also, with all due respect, if everyone do their part by wearing their mask and also quarantining and also not lying about their contact tracing, we will be further ahead with this pandemic. I soon start pulling people file who being socially irresponsible. That's like they have ankle bracelet monitoring system to monitor people wearing ankle bracelets. But apparently, they don't monitor the system real time. Oh. I imagine that's what our contact tracing system looks like. Another text. Nope, the people, stupid. Get your vaccine. Most efficient way to end the crisis. No one have time to hold anyone's hand or just dead and leave the rest of us alone. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. That's a decision that you can make for yourself. But since you share the country with 400,000 other people and you share the planet with billions of people, and we all share the planet with the future humans who's going to live here, mm-hmm. then you go get your vaccine. And that's the way to end your crisis. Yes. And we will all support you in doing that because that's how human rights work. Yes. And I'm not being glib. I'm just saying, it all sounds so very Hitler-esque.
Mm-hmm. What's the term they use? Draconian?
Right, draconian. Mm-hmm. That's before Hitler. Like, because we didn't pay attention to what draconian meant, then we got Hitler. Mm-hmm. And since we're not really paying attention to what Hitler meant, we're getting a lot of things we don't want. But let me make this very clear. Here's what I mean. It is one thing to be a staunch supporter of vaccines. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to attempt to shut down every conversation or any conversation that questions the validity of mandatory vaccines mm-hmm. and of coercive vaccine programs. It's another thing. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the refusal to allow a space. You don't even have to create it. You keep shutting down the conversations that people are trying to have about vaccines. Another text, Aaron, for Christ's sake, you really talk too much on an hour's show. Why do guests even come on your show two or three times to never speak their thoughts? Well, this particular rant this morning was about my thoughts and not about their thoughts. And I want to keep them separate from that because, as you notice, it's a highly charged thing I'm talking about. And that's why I sort of kept the conversation to myself, because I didn't invite them into that part of the conversation. I'm reading your text because you pay me the money. And as soon as I finish reading your text, we can go to the conversation. Good afternoon. If the government wants greater numbers of people to be vaccinated, they should make themselves accountable both legally and financially if adverse effects were to occur. Mm-hmm. And they should create a space to explain more education about how vaccines work. And stop telling us that all vaccines are safe when we know that all vaccines have a risk for a small percentage of people that take it. See, that's where the hesitancy comes in the disconnect in the language. The politicians are telling us that the vaccine is safe and nobody has ever died from it, and why are you worried about it? But the science tells us that that's not how vaccines work, and that's why people are hesitant. Yeah. Another text, we, the FNM, have a secret plan to win the next election. The government is going to pay off every mortgage. You have a balance of $25,000 and under left to pay, and two minimum wage is going to be $550 a week. I want to say to whoever this PLP person is who's sending me this text, thank you for that joke this morning. Big joke. Thank you for that this morning. And so, to my texter, we will move into the second part of the show. Good morning, Ms. Erin Brown.
Good morning. Good morning, Bahamas.
And good morning, Mr. Darwin Thompson.
Good morning.
Former executive in the organization Rights Bahamas. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Right, right. So today we are talking about inclusion for the disabled community. Mm-hmm. So let's start the show just very quickly by giving us the appropriate language, which terms are acceptable and which terms are not acceptable anymore by the community.
Okay. Well, when we're speaking to terms and labels, it has a lot to do with the individual person, mm-hmm. if I must say. A lot of times you hear we veer more towards a person with a disability because it's persons first. And then you would hear disabled community or disability community, okay. which is more specific towards the disability. Both of them are absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely correct. But then you're going to have persons who would prefer to be called or referred to as differently abled, who are referred to be viewed as challenged persons. Mm. And so then you must also take into account their individual view and preference.
Absolutely.
But from a global standpoint, we're veering more towards persons first, as well as leading with disabled community or disability community, because it refers to the identity of the individual and the community. And that's the importance. That's where we're leaning more towards. Yes, we have different cultural preferences, stereotypes, other things that we're dealing with. We must make a stand and we must create a model that we can use in order to increase access, inclusion, and opportunities for our community with disabilities.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And so the term handicapped.
Yes. We don't want to use handicap.
Right.
And here's why. You know, handicap evolved into many things. At first, in the 1700s, if I recall, it was used for those veterans or those soldiers who came back from the war. The government gave them allowance for hat in hand, a cap in hand, in order to beg. Legally beg or pander on the street.
Okay.
And then it went into the reference of handicapped children, referring to children who may have needed assistance due to well, they didn't use disability, they used handicap. And then if you're a sports lover like how I am, you realize that handicap actually means you're the best and they're giving you penalties in order to make mm-hmm. the level the playing field,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so today we see a lot of terms like handicap parking, and the term handicap is is not used. The term cripple is not used.
Yeah.
All of these terms, retarded, all of these things that we have heard for a very long time had been accepted, we now recognize as being degrading, as being devaluing, as not increased the confidence or even the identity of oneself. Mm-hmm. And so we don't use those. So when we're referring to parking, we say disabled parking.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that's something I have to practice, right? Because we've used the term handicap for so long,
yes,
without understanding it. Even I have to work through that. And I want to say to people, that's why that the word retarded, we use that mm-hmm. for like scientific purposes.
Yeah.
Like the growth was retarded. But we don't speak
right.
about people
right.
in that way.
Right. And I think that's why that we use the intellectual disabilities now, neurodiverse, cognitive disabilities. Those are more within the terms of what we replace that term for. And I'm glad that you said that. I think that's why the challenge is using the word disabled, because a lot of people focus on the prefix, the dis and the able, and what does that mean literally? But yet we have to also recognize that this is a part of an identity as gender, as race, as sexual orientation, religion. So we cannot leave it out. We need to identify it. We need to allow persons to not only be empowered, but what was the saying? Reclaim your identity. You know, reclaim, we have terms like black magic and black girl magic. Before, we came to that point because mm-hmm. it was nigger and nigga and
yeah.
all of colored people and all
yeah.
of that. But now when we hear black, we think proud, we think confident, we feel that, we embody that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we have to do, the same thing with disability, because it is a part of your identity. And the more you run from it, push it aside, change the way it sound and it look, it's actually a detriment to you and standing firm in who you are.
Mm-hmm. And because the what is promised to you by your constitution
yes.
is equal and equitable access, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
not just you get to come to the table, but the tools you need to sit at the table and participate in the discussion at the same level as everybody else at the table are available to you.
I am so glad that you said that. The last time we were here, we spoke about inspiration porn when Papa came on and he
yeah.
said, you know, we should be an inspiration to everyone else and so on and so forth. And there's a young lady, and I want to really shout her out, Tamia Knowles, who is a student with a disability who was in the top 10 for the Bahamas Primary Student of the Year Awards, and she goes to Emmer E. Cooper Primary.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to shout her out to say congratulations
mm-hmm.
for not only being dedicated to your education, but for showing up. Because living with a disability, a lot of times they focus on our disability. Inclusive education speaks to focusing on the barriers
mm-hmm.
that exist. And we must remain focused on the barriers and not the type of disabilities. When they spoke about her, the whole paragraphs that was presented, two of them spoke specifically and depthly about her disability. And then it frankly quietly went into, oh, yes, she was a part of this group and that group, and students and parents and teachers chipped in. I personally read that and I went, oh, my goodness, they missed a whole opportunity to really uplift our students with disability, to reinforce inclusive education and what that means. Because a part of the Equal Opportunities Persons with Disability Act mandates
mm-hmm.
that it is accessible, that it is inclusive, and there are opportunities for all. And so I want to just shout her out and lift you up and say, continue doing and being the best you.
Call her name again.
Tamia Knowles.
More than Tamia Knowles. Also, I want to send a shout out to Kadisha Trico, a young Bahamian in university, I think at the University of Arizona, who works with Equality Bahamas
mm-hmm.
and is also working in mainstreaming inclusion, right?
Yes.
Abilities inclusion in policy. I want to send a shout out to Kaylisha. Now, Kaylisha is from Mayaguana, and people who know Kaylisha. I want to say to their government, you see that citizen right there?
Mm-hmm.
That is a citizen you need to take care of. Because Kaylisha is a woman using a wheelchair, and she would take herself wherever she had to go, despite the lack of accessible
That's
sidewalks
like the barriers.
Or mobility mm-hmm. buses. And some idiot lick her down in her wheelchair. And she'd been to court, and the court and the people them trying to tell her, it's her fault that she had to use the road because the sidewalk was not accessible to her in her wheelchair.
And
she stay moving herself about anyway, mm-hmm. right? So I want to say, Kaylisa, we got you, man. We see you,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There's so many members of the community
yes,
who refuse
so
to
many.
Be immobilized by the barriers that we
yes.
refuse
yes.
to deal with.
Yes, culturally, from in society. And there was a statement that I made in December that I really want an excerpt really quickly that spoke specifically to our people with disabilities. Within these beautiful islands of the Bahamas reside a people. People living with disabilities who are professionals, experts in their fields, knowledge, innovative and creative entrepreneurs, and business owners. Children with disabilities who need to see their reflection
mm-hmm.
amongst the hall of nation builders. Youth with disabilities who fight every day for their voices to be heard, counted, and amplified. Parents with disabilities and caregivers who show up every moment of every day in their roles as providers and service providers. We are a nation of diverse members with disabilities who are prepared to invest, build, and support sustainability once given the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome.
That's our reality.
Right? And so even in the discussion about the pandemic and policies and protocols, what I need to know is where is the vaccine, where is the disabled community specific
yes.
policy,
mm-hmm.
right, for vaccinations and for vaccine responses?
Yes.
Which section of the clinic, of the hospital is disabilities accessible,
right?
There are just so many issues. In your isolation and quarantine facilities, what provisions have been made available for differently abled and disabled people living with disabilities?
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that we expect more, it's not just one person being outrageous.
No, it's
the
not.
State knows that it has an obligation to provide equitable
mm-hmm.
responses, solutions and provisions for specific member or specific needs
yes.
communities
yes. Yes.
in this country.
And this is why the conversation needs not to just lead to disability conversations only. It's to speak about accessibility
right.
and an inclusivity, because when you create these policies, when you create these emergency orders, it should be about increasing access for all to use it. And so when you make reference to just non-disabled persons because you have not spoken to inclusion within your policies, then you are excluding. Whether it was by design or intent, we need to have more intentful policies. We need our leaders to be more aware, because disability intersects the fabrics of our lives. And these leaders are going to enter these demographics. Some of them are currently living with disabilities
mm-hmm.
and are not identifying as such, but because they have the means, to create and establish and develop support and service providers to help them, they're not forced to. Whereas marginalized persons don't have those means, and they must rely on the inaccessible infrastructures and the policies to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to work.
And if you're sitting in your chair right now thinking, well, I'm not disabled, so I'm not really concerned about accessibility in shelters. But mark you, mm-hmm. every single person can be a disabled person.
Especially in disaster and emergency.
Right.
And so when we're talking about inclusive disaster, emergency preparedness, recovery, and relief,
mm-hmm.
we want to ensure that the functional needs of people with disabilities, or people in general, all of us, are adequately addressed prior to an emergency, enabling emergency responders to make informed decisions regarding the best use of available resources. And why we say prior to, that also includes the mode of communications.
Yep.
How do you speak about the disaster, and what are the available resources made for the public that all can use. When we talk about emergency responders, are they trained? Are they given the necessary support and equipment in order to do so? You are four times likely to either acquire a disability or die within a disaster, especially one of a hurricane and a flooding. Mm-hmm. And then we also know that we don't recognize who within our community live with a disability. We don't recognize those families that have marginalized or vulnerable group members to give them support. We have this saying that, okay, so know your risks. So I want you to pack everything and the kitchen sink. Where am I taking all of these items that you're now asking me to keep? What am I going to do when the water comes in and rush it away and my wheelchair rushes away with it? And yet I've survived this, but yet what do I do next? Mm-hmm. I have nowhere to go. Wherever you place me, it's still inaccessible. There's no one trained to interact, to engage. These are the things that are necessary in order for all persons to survive in disaster and emergency. And it's not a separate and apart conversation. We need to stop that. We need to ensure that all shelters are accessible. And I'm not just talking about a ramp. We need to ensure that all support staff and service providers are trained and are given the necessary support.
Right. And that the bathrooms, right, that there is a wheelchair accessible bathroom.
And there's
right?
many different elements that you look at when you think about a bathroom. It's not just the doorways. It's also the placement of where the sink is, the mirror, the hand sanitizers, the hand wash, the toilet, where the bars are,
yeah.
the shower. Is it a roll-in shower? Does it allow persons who have some mobility to get in, sit properly? Is there a separate chair? Are there persons on staff to assist with that? Because we also know during a pandemic, physical distance protocols are important because persons are going to need support staff members to assist them in order to maintain hygiene, in order to maintain any maintenance of what is needed to be safe during these times.
Look here, absolutely. Absolutely. Like the question I want to ask post-Dorian, mm-hmm. with the inception, the idea, right, that we're going to put up temporary dome homes for people who are unable to resettle temporarily, want to remain in Abaco, right? Was there any consideration for accessibility in those dome structures?
And this is why we're pushing, our community is pushing to change the conversation. We need not to be so reactive. From the inset, when Hurricane Dorian came, was a prime example of how we cannot repeat. We cannot repeat that. We cannot repeat that recovery and that relief process. We need to have an honest conversation and say, okay, this absolutely did not work for non-disabled persons and persons with disabilities. All of our marginal group members, they continue to suffer to this day. Mm-hmm. And even in receiving those dorms, there should be a placement of a disability inclusion specialist, a consultant, an access specialist. And don't sit here and tell me that we have architects that do that. Obviously, we don't.
No, I mean, no.
Don't sit here and tell me that Ministry of Work has that. I'm sorry.
We're getting ready to fire that boy at the head of...
The point is, these things are more than possible.
Mm-hmm.
They are more than possible, and we have to change the way we currently do things and the way we currently think, and we have to engage the model, invite, participate, engage.
Inclusion.
Absolutely.
Look here, we got a few minutes left. I'm going to get to your text, but I have a important question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a para athlete,
yes.
Right? And I imagine that with your one good leg and your super bionic leg, you could beat me with my two wonky leg, right?
Your descriptions always make me smile.
Because I fast, you know, but I only fast when raccoon chasing me.
And you fast when you're washing the dishes with one hand.
Yeah, with one hand,
that.
I get it with that. You were able to become a professional athlete or a world-class athlete
yes.
with a disability.
Yes.
Because you had access to the appropriate prosthetics.
Well, it was because I fought for access.
To the pro-
Yes. And
let's
so,
talk about how that having access to prosthetics changes.
Yes. Access in healthcare changes lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Access in general changes everything, the playing field. For me in particular, because I never subscribed to the I must stay inside because I am living with one leg.
Yeah.
I am to remain hidden. I don't have much to say because I live with a disability. I should not have any desires or any goals. I never subscribed to that. And so I showed up with my crutches. I had crutches and a wheelchair. And I got those. I don't even recall how I got those, but I had no insurance. I lost insurance when I was diagnosed with cancer. And so these are realities of persons.
Hold on, you lost your insurance.
I had insurance when I was non-disabled. And when I was diagnosed with stage 4 osteosarcoma, my insurance said, I'm sorry. this isn't happening anymore.
Hold on, that's what the insurance company told you?
Yes, we no longer had it.
You mean the insurance?
The coverage was depleted. It's done.
Because you were sick.
Because I now
needed
it.
Oh, no, it was depleted.
No, I never used it before. The fact that when I went to file, go and you do your stuff, it was like, we no longer cover you. But that's the reality. But getting back to the prosthetics. Yeah. The prosthetics is, as an adaptive athlete, specifically prosthetics is important because it allows us to not only to train, not only to develop, but in order to do it in an adaptive way. So a specialized, customized way. So my specific need is an above the knee prosthetic. So I need a knee, I need a foot, and I need an ankle. For uh-huh. those who are below the knee would need just an ankle and a foot. And so I was able to obtain a prosthetic because I literally did not stay inside. I haphazardly met a prosthetist who said to me, so what are you doing? And I said, well, I want to do the marathon, but I think I'm going to do it with my crutches. And he looked at me like 26.2 miles. Miss, are you serious? And I'm like, I'm very serious. If they allowed
what else you
me
could
to,
do. That's what I had
they,
to do when I broke my
ankle.
The
only options I had, it was a wheelchair or crutches. And so leading into that, he got my contact, got back to me, fitted me for a prosthetic and said, it's yours. And I did the marathon the following year.
Okay, so very quickly, how are we going to raise money mm-hmm. to ensure that particularly children, right, but all members of the community mm-hmm. that need it can access not just prosthetics, but contemporary technology
yes.
prosthetics.
Yes, and I don't, to me, it's not specific to money. We need more disability allies. We have persons in public and private spaces who can make changes within their company's policies, their organizational models that will ensure access, inclusion, and opportunities mm-hmm. for children, professionals, athletics, everything that is needed within our society. So we need our disability allies to stand up, to speak up, and to recognize that we are a resource and we are you, because you will enter this demographic whether you see it coming or you don't.
And I can tell you who the three biggest disability allies are, and if you are not at this moment, you will be in the next couple of moments, should be the government of the Bahamas, mm-hmm. Atlantis, and Bahama.
I would even say Ministry of Education.
It's intrinsic. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's intrinsic and inherent in mm-hmm. what you do mm-hmm. that you would be a champion
yeah.
for disabled access.
Yes.
But let's get to these texts as I devise a plan to raise money for prosthetics. First text, Human Rights Forever, and thanks saluting AD in your opening remarks. Thank you. Another text. Tell your guests if she see how people in Nassau is drive, you would use that word to describe them. That's that R word we were talking about. Tell her I hope she ain't fair skinned because she used the N word quite loosely. No, she didn't. She used it for academic purposes
yes.
specifically. And I think in that context, it was acceptable. Another text. Good morning, Aaron. I just want to say that it is a pleasure to listen to you. Thank you. I try to catch your show anytime I'm at my desk when you're on. In reference to the rude person who says you talk too much on your own show, I think the solution is to give you more time. You deserve 2 hours, honestly. Your show is very balanced, sensible, and factual. Listen, Texter, thank you for that very much. I am a novice, but also it's important to bring as many voices to the table as possible. And look at what happens when we have a multitude of voices at the table. You inspire somebody else to take a different avenue in the same subject, right? And you don't see it as competition. You see it as growing and expanding the discourse and doing the thing that you intended, bringing more people into the conversation. Because when you do that, you can't force them to have the conversation the way you want to have it. And I'm speaking to those people specifically responsible for the government's vaccine policy, if we want to call it the vaccine encouragement program, right? The vaccine, because that's what it is, mm-hmm. right? You got to figure out, you got to practice empathy, spatial awareness, mindfulness, empathy. Two more texts. Hi, it appears to me global leaders are trying to get rid of anyone that seems to be a strain on their government system. Do you know how many seniors died in New York because of government negligence? Mm-hmm. It is sad. Now, look here, that is...
Before COVID.
That, like my Facebook friend and community cousin, Marlon Johnson, would say that's a wild stretch. But your causation and correlation, mm-hmm. right? That's a wild stretch. But I tell you what is true. What is true is that governments are losing their capacity and ability mm-hmm. to take care of everyone. And yes. you could see this. I hope y'all could see this over time with your particular government. And it's I don't think it's that they're all a bunch of disgusting, lazy people. I think they're overwhelmed by the weight, the largeness, the grandness of the task of governance. Mm-hmm. And they're making mistakes.
And unprepared too.
Right, and unprepared.
Yeah.
Right, and it's happening across the board. But the most vulnerable people lose out in the end. Mm-hmm. And that's why I try to remind government actors, stakeholders, people rely on you doing your job for their survival, for everyday survival. Last text and then give us your contact information, Aaron. Good morning, Aaron. Could you please tell Aaron that Mr. Hulson Mutri, Speaker of the House of Assembly, will be having a day for all citizens to come and voice their feelings in or in front of the House soon. I don't remember the exact date. Listen to today's news or radio. So
yes.
For
everyone else, the disability hotline is 807-4330. You can WhatsApp that. You can call that. Leave a voice message. We will get right back to you.
Absolutely. And thank you, Texter. This would be a great opportunity for members of marginalized communities to organize your concerns in singular voices and be prepared to present them on the Speaker's Day.
Or have someone present it for you, because we also know that it's inaccessible for most persons using certain things to enter Parliament in order to raise your voice. So let's give some more options, Halson. I see where you're going, but we need to be very inclusive here.
And if you're trying to figure out how you could help, bring a couple pieces of plywood to Rawson Square so they could put it on the steps to make sure the differently abled people could get where they need to be.
Let's adapt.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Erin Brown. I'm going to have you back on again as my regular inclusion consultant.
We'd appreciate
and
that.
And Mr. Darwin Aaron Thompson, Green. I want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for inspiring us, even though you didn't talk much. But you're going to be back soon.
Poetry,
anyway,
I love it.
You've been tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM and On the Clock with Erin Green. Stay tuned, because Levan Miller and Unleash is next.